If Congress passes intelligence reforms this summer, it may be in part at the direction of Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert. Despite his title, Dennis Hastert doesn't speak much in public, although he has written a book about his career and spoke about it with Morning Edition's Steve Inskeep.
Dennis Hastert was a wrestling coach in Illinois. He's a solid man with a firm handshake, and he likes to compare his current job to the old one.
Well, I see it from a coach's perspective. You know, we have to win. You have to win and keep the House in a majority. Otherwise, you don't have the job of Speaker of the House. And you also have to win legislation, because only I really believe in the old adage that good government's good politics. So we have to pass the right things so that our members can go out and talk about it and have something to run on.
Hastert spoke in New York City, where he just attended a Republican fundraiser. He travels constantly, raising money and campaigning for members of his party's narrow majority. Between trips, he works to hold that majority together on the floor of the House. Last year, a massive Medicare reform bill was well short of passage. Democrats and some conservative Republicans opposed it. Lawmakers were given 15 minutes to vote, but Hastert and his lieutenants held the voting open for about 3 hours, which is a record, until they persuaded enough lawmakers to switch. Some Republicans later complained about the pressure they were under, though Hastert insists he mainly tried to persuade.
I went around to individuals and talked about policy arguments. I probably talked about 40 people that day over and over and over again about why this is important to do this. And finally, we winnowed down to get the votes we needed.
It was interesting to me in reading your book here to see frank discussions of the fact, and it's a political reality, it has always happened in Congress when Republicans have been in charge, when Democrats have been in charge. You go to members sometimes and ask them to vote for something that they just don't believe in because they need a win for the party.
Well, that's part of my job, is keeping our Republican family, so to speak, together. And sometimes the individual interests, and first of all, we never ask anybody to ethically do something that would go against the grain in their district. I mean, but we do say there's a bigger good in here, and don't make the perfect the enemy of the good in trying to pass good legislation. Every piece of legislation is a compromise, and one of the things that I think coming into Congress for somebody who has never been involved in the legislative process, to get something there what is doable, is not necessarily perfect. What's doable is what you can put together.
An assault weapons ban is expiring this year. There's been a lot of debate among Democrats and Republicans about whether to vote to extend it or whether not to vote at all. If it were just up to you, would you vote on that assault weapons ban, extending it?
Well, I have to, whether it's up to me or not, I have to look at what we can do.
There are an awful lot of votes for it on the Democratic side and a fair number on the Republican side.
It's split on both sides. Been there, done that, I know.
Explain your reasoning there. I mean, it does sound like that's something that might have a chance on the floor.
Well, it might have a chance on the floor.
It sounds like it's something that you wouldn't be opposed to.
Let me just say, if we pass it on the floor, there's no promise that we can get it out of the Senate, because the Senate has defeated it already. So it can't become law unless it's going to be passed in the Senate.
You write that the incivility and anger in the Congress right now is so severe that you don't know what to do about it. You're not sure how to bring it back up again.
Well, you know, when I first came to the Congress, the Democrats had over 100 votes plurality. They had a huge majority. When they had those huge margins, they could be civil to us. It didn't make, you know, they'd just go ahead and beat us and still be nice to you. So the incivility wasn't there. As the parties became closer and closer, and finally from 95 on, there is a huge competition day in and day out.
You even write in your book that you end up thinking that some Democrats don't have the best interest of the country at heart. You write at one point that you think the Democrats wanted the economy to get worse in 2003.
Well, I think that there was a point where they thought that they were at a political advantage if we didn't solve the problems, if we didn't bring consumer confidence back, we didn't bring investor confidence back, that we didn't bring business confidence back, that they would have a better chance at the polls.
Thinking that they'd have a better chance at the polls if the economy deteriorates is one thing. Saying that they actively tried to make the economy worse, it seems like something else.
Well, if you don't pass legislation, you lay those premises that the economy is going to get worse.
You write a fascinating story in here about your election as Speaker of the House. It happened in the midst of the impeachment scandal with President Clinton. Newt Gingrich had left office. His apparent successor, Robert Livingston, had to leave. And you report that a number of Republicans came to you, among them Tom DeLay, who had been your boss, and said it was time for you to run. Tom DeLay wanted the job, but he said, I'm nuclear. I can't take the job. What was that like?
Well, it all happened within a couple hours. I mean, that's an amazing thing. People, when I became speaker, I pulled out a couple short stories of all the speakers of the House. And most of those guys went through their whole life aiming to be speaker. But it's interesting, you know, these people became speaker and they lasted for a couple of years and then they died because it took them so long to get there. My rising to the speakership came very quickly. Gingrich finally called me up and said, you're the one that's going to have to take this party forward. And so that's a heavy load to be putting on somebody's shoulders when they didn't expect it. But I decided to do it and we did it.
This month, Congress is a lot busier than it normally is in August, considering proposed changes to the nation's intelligence agencies, among other things.
That's correct. Well, it's a result of the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah.
I've asked the six committees of jurisdiction to come back. We're having 15 hearings during the month of August. As you well know, we have to go through the hearing process and have people come in and give testimony and do things before we can put legislation together. And we hope that we have some legislative proposals ready to go.
Is this a good idea to do it this quickly?
Well, I don't want to knee-jerk anything. We're going to pass something that probably tries to solve the problems and what is perceived to be the problems, and that's to make sure that we get money into the agencies in the right way, and we have somebody that's in control of all intelligence, and that there has to be some redundancy, I think, in intelligence, too, just to test what intelligence comes forward. But those things being said, we're going to get do our best to get it done.
Will there be a national intelligence director when you're done?
There's a
overseeing all the different agencies?
I'm not sure what his title will be, and I'm not sure that he'll be in the White House or out of the White House, but I think there's somebody has to be responsible for the bigger picture.
Dennis Hastert is the author of Speaker, which is also his job title. He's Speaker of the House of Representatives. Mr. Speaker, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.